Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Okay, so welcome back to the Talking Hockey Podcast, episode 57. We have Eric and Martin here and a really special guest, Brant Myers. He's the author of Painkiller, a memoir of big league addiction. It's a book that Brant sent me about a week ago now. Had a chance to read through a couple chapters, and it's by far one of the most interesting books I've ever read. And honestly, it's very hard to put down just because of the stories that he tells and just the insanity of the life that Brant, that you've lived. So thank you so much for joining the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So first off, I just wanted to maybe start off with the story behind the book, as in, like, how did you come up with the idea of writing it? What was the story around kind of starting it and writing a book? Because you were an NHL player, you weren't an author, you didn't go to journalism school, you didn't. Yeah. So how did this come to be, so to speak?
Welcome back, everyone, to the Talking Hockey Podcast. It's your favorite producer, Luke, here to remind you to follow and subscribe on whatever streaming service you use. Leave a review on Apple, visit our website, talkinghockeypodcast.com, and follow us on Instagram at Talking Hockey for daily content. Now, let's get into today's episode with your favorite group of guys, Luke, Eric, Ty, and Martin.
Yeah, I mean, I never, you know, I, again, my schooling, I believe, I did finish grade 9. But that was a couple classes I think I took in grade 10. But I never really pictured it. I guess it happened in my fifth treatment center when I really decided to dig in and change my life. I just started to write about, I guess, the earliest memories that I had. I also was wanting to write a proposal to the National Hockey League and the NHLPA to be like a sober liaison for the league or the teams. And then I just sort of go, you know, I don't know. I had 50 pages or something like that. And then I just kept writing. And then I got hired by the Los Angeles Kings in 2015. And I put it on the shelf. I stopped writing. And then when that job ended in 2018 is when I picked it up again and finished it.
Everyone in the audience, for context, right? So Brant wrote this book based off of, you know, his life story. He was in the NHL for a number of years. I think one thing you mentioned in the book was that you were the only player to ever get permanently suspended from the NHL, which was some type of record. I think, was it Mark Ribeiro that almost got suspended from the league as well? But it's a unique accomplishment, I guess you could say.
Yeah. It's not one. It's not one that I necessarily planned on getting, but it is.
And so, and in your career, you were, you know, you were more of a goon type player, you know, the classic, you know, going into fights. You were moving across the league for years, and the main, you know, crux, the core of this book is talking about the addiction issues that you faced. And it was all these, it was cocaine, it was alcohol, it was various other, I think, gambling addiction as well.
No gambling.
No gambling? No, gambling. Okay, so maybe I don't know why I thought of that, but yeah, for alcohol and cocaine specifically, you were going around the league. You got suspended multiple times for multiple different reasons. So just the audience has a kind of background stories. So you started out writing the book when you were in your, did you mention your fifth stint in rehab, was it?
Yeah. My fifth, yeah.
Yeah, so your fifth stint in rehab. And now you work with the LA Kings. You worked with them until 2018. What were you doing with them to kind of help address the issues with regards to addiction, with painkillers? Like, what was your purpose there?
Well, the Kings had some issues in 2015 with a few players that got arrested. And then... Dean Lombardi was my old general manager and Daryl Sutter, my old coach, and they were both in LA and they felt that they wanted to bring in a support role. So I can't get into too much about what I did with the team.
Yeah, of course.
Or what I did with certain players, but I was just basically a, I guess you could say, an additional support system for any players that were going through any type of addiction issues.
Yeah, an awesome. And do you currently do anything working with the NHL right now with regards to the same types of issues?
No, nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. Oh, okay.
And so what kind of, because I think a big story that came out recently from TSN was talking about the idea of pain addiction or painkiller addiction. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch that documentary. I mentioned it on the phone when we briefly talked the other day, and it was a huge story that came out, generated a lot of, you know, discussions around not just the NHL, but with fans about the way players, you know, kind of put themselves through all this pain to get to the playoffs, to go through the playoffs, and how addictions form out of that. So do you have any kind of, you know, stories there or for how to address those kind of issues and what your best learnings were from your time in the NHL going through those same types of pains that other players are going through now and what you learned from that?
I did watch that piece. Again, when I played, you know, the title of the book is Painkiller, but it's not related to opiates. That's why we separated them. There's pain. And that, there was just a lot of pain and struggle in the book. And then killer, almost, I was sort of turned into some type of a person that was trying to inflict pain on people from a young age. But my drug of choice was cocaine. And so for me, my healing mechanism was alcohol. Like, that to me was, I guess, just would be just as good as, you know, some strong painkillers. But as far as what I watched on the television, it doesn't surprise me. I don't think that anybody that is making millions of dollars playing a sport that they love would go through anything to keep it going. I think that probably in any walk of life, if somebody's going to pay you $50,000 every 2 weeks, you know, like, you're gonna find ways to to keep your role going. So I don't
think for sure.
Definitely.
And do you think that it's because I don't think, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but other sports aren't exactly like the NHL in terms of injuries, right? Like, you see it in the NBA, like, you know, hockey fans compare it all the time. They talk about, you know, hockey players are so tough and NBA players aren't. I don't think that's necessarily true, but that's the narrative. And, you know, when NBA players are injured, a lot of the time they will go out. Whereas we hear all these stories after the playoffs of, you know, this guy played on a broken ankle, broken foot, broken ribs, broken everything suddenly when they get out of the playoffs, right? So what do you think about the culture of the NHL when it comes to how they deal with injuries and playing through it? Like, it's a tough question to ask, I know,
but it's also changed a lot since I played. Like, I can only comment on up until 2005, which was 16 years ago in the league. So a lot of stuff is changed in the league. I'm not up to par with what their current system is. Again, I didn't work for the National Hockey League or the union, so I was sort of just we had our own thing going on in Los Angeles. But as far as today's, I just don't have enough info on it.
Yeah, for sure. And Martin, did you raise your hand? Oh, no. You raised your hand. But so with regards to, so you talked about this other thing, which is, you know, the title of the book's Painkillers. And it wasn't necessarily about opioids. It was about, you know, how you dealt with your own pain in your own life, right? So I think one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about was, how do you approach mental health, and what advice do you give to other people when it comes to alcohol addiction, drug addiction, and kind of, you know, dealing with their own types of their own emotional states or mental states, right? Because that's obviously a major part of the book as well.
Yeah. The book's really about, I think, changing when change doesn't seem possible. Mm-hmm. People say that they see light at the end of the tunnel. Well, I saw a Mack truck. I didn't see any light. And I think that what I tried to get across in the book is that no matter if you do see that Mack truck coming, if you put the work in, eventually that Mack truck's going to take a left-hand or a right-hand turn, and it's going to miss you. But you have to do the work. You have to stop pointing the finger and blaming other people, which addicts do regularly. They start saying that it's so-and-so's fault and so-and-so's fault, but really I had to start pointing the finger at Brant Myers and going, it's actually your fault. And what are you going to do about it? And it's no different than anybody that wants to change their life in a positive way, from, like, you know, going vegan or losing weight. I mean, try losing 30 pounds when you've been trying to lose weight for 10 years and you can't do it. It feels impossible. But there's always that first step. And so hopefully.
And how do you make that first step? Like, what, you know, because it's easy to, for me, the reason I'm asking is because there's always people that are like, you know, I want to make this change in my life. I want to be the person that works out every day. I want to be the person that doesn't procrastinate. I want to be the person that does this, right? But it's hard to make that shift in your mind from something you're entirely used to, which in your case was, you know, alcohol as an example, and then going, no, like, I need to take responsibility for this. But how do you actually go about that, and how do you structure your life around that to make those types of changes?
Well, your goals have to be very short term and achievable. You can't.
Yep. Okay.
You can't go. Like, for me, I had to look at it. I had to, you know, my goals were within a 12 to 14 hour period. I couldn't look at.
Wow. Okay.
I couldn't look at tomorrow. I couldn't do that. When I wanted to lose weight, when I went into treatment, I decided that I know Brant Myers. I know Brant Myers isn't going to work out every day. I'd like to. I'd like to think I will, but I won't.
Yeah.
So what is achievable? Well, how about every second day? Can you do that? So I did that, and it worked. And I worked out every second day. I took the next day off and did nothing. But then the next day, I said, it's time to work out. So I was setting goals for myself that were achievable. If you set goals for yourself that aren't, you're going to get really frustrated really quick. And then you're going to throw the towel in again and say, well, I just fucked that up again.
Yeah. And so, but you made it to the NHL. There's very few guys that can make it into the NHL. You were a part of the top one of the 1%. when it came to athletes that play hockey, right? So you must have had like a lot of the bad habits that you formed, you mentioned, right? Like you finished grade 9 in high school. A lot of these habits that you started when you were young, right? So what was it, do you think, that got you to the NHL in the first place? And what was it, the some of your habits that you were doing, or was everything just brand new after, like what was your process like to get to the NHL in the first place?
Well, it's one that's hard to explain because it there were so many twists and turns, and there was so much and blood and sweat and tears that went into it. You know, like to play a game or a shift in the National Hockey League is that's very, very hard to do. And not only do you have to be gifted from God or the heavens with natural talent, but you got to get lucky.
Yeah.
You got to dodge. You got to dodge injuries, like serious injuries, along the way. Things just have to sort of line up for you, and then when you get your chance, you got to take advantage of it. So I think I was fortunate that I loved the game. I loved it. So me working hard at hockey was not hard for me to do.
Yeah, because you were very sorry. Mine go.
When did your addiction problems start? Like how, like in juniors or when you made the NHL, like made the AHL? When did that sort of?
I would say that it really ramped up when I got traded back to Lethbridge in Alberta, playing for the Hurricanes when I was 17. That's when it really picked up, where it was heavy drinking at 17.
Like, were you, like, don't answer if you want, were you like, was it like parties, or like became beyond parties for you at some point, like where you were drinking on your own?
No, never drinking on my own. Always.
Okay.
Always parties.
Okay. Yeah, in the book, it's always just... Just parties and parties and parties, and like, going in the club. And I think there's a story in there about how you had a contract with the Sharks for $1.5 million, and I guess one of the executives for the Sharks, their wives was at the bar, and your contract was dependent on your sobriety, and you ended up ordering like 30 drinks or something crazy.
Yeah, it's probably not the best time to to be drinking, but
it was just bizarre. Martin, you need to get this book, man. This is like your book. Like I promise you, but So you have a lot of crazy stories like that. Like you were moving around the league constantly. The Lightning, I think. You talked a little bit about the Bruins and how you didn't really like it there, or that you didn't have like a connection with the team.
Well, no, what it was they called me up to play one game. I didn't know it was going to be one game against Buffalo, and I went out there and did my job and grabbed a couple guys and. The way they sent me
down.
You got
31 PIMs.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, so I thought I was doing my job. And, it was the way that I got sent down after the game that didn't sit too well with me.
Yeah.
So what's your take on fighting in the NHL right now? You have a very unique perspective. That was your life in the NHL. Martin, how many PIMs did he have over the course of his career? Were you on his hockey DB page?
In 154 NHL games, he has 687 PIMs.
Okay. Average.
But not doing his totals from the IHL or the AHL. In what one year, that? He had 213 in the IHL at one point.
Yeah.
Crazy junior numbers too.
Juniors are the But you know what? We had more fights in the NHL when I played in a week than they'll have all year this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And do you think that's a good thing for the league or a bad thing for the league?
For the league?
Or I guess for the players too, right? You can look at it in multiple dimensions.
Yeah. I mean, from an entertainment value, it would be like going to an MMA fight and them not fighting. I mean, you know, I just remember the energy in that, in those arenas on a Saturday or Friday night when we play Philly or Boston or Montreal or somebody, anybody actually. And the amount of energy that was in that building after not only I fought or a couple other guys were sticking up for our teammates fought. I haven't heard a building like that since then. There's a difference in the roar of the crowd between a goal and a big fight.
Yeah.
You can feel it.
Yeah. It's not even close to the same thing, right? Yeah. Like you have two guys going at it.
Yeah.
You know, nobody, everyone in the stands is up on their feet.
Yeah. But the rules have made it that way for these guys. Not their fault. I mean, they're coming into the league wearing visors now. There's no way I could have done my job wearing a visor. There's no way.
And do you think that, so like what, with regards to fighting, like that was like a huge part of a large part of your game, obviously in the NHL, in the AHL, in your hockey career. Did you enjoy fighting? Was it something like at the time, because there were stories about at the time where you were like, you were angry a lot of the time. So it was like fighting was a way to, it seemed to me anyways, that was a way for you to kind of let it all out, so to speak, right? So at the time, did you enjoy the fighting? And then now looking back at it, do you think it was something that you were still like, yeah, I'm happy to have been doing that at the time?
Well, no, I think like in the book, I give a really detailed view of what I thought of fighting. It had nothing to do with liking it.
And yeah, okay. So that has to do with fighting. So before, I'm just thinking. So with regards to, so we talked a little bit about how for someone to change, they need to like take responsibility. They need to, you know, take it upon themselves and make those changes, make those small changes. For you, what were the small changes that you made in your life that had a really big impact? And you also talk about the kid that you had and how that also kind of helped drive you towards, you know, being a better father, a better person in general. And so do you mind just telling us a little bit about that process and about, you know, that situation as well? I feel like that was that's a very powerful part of the book.
Yeah, I mean, Chloe was born a week after I got sober. So it really didn't, you know, I wanted to be there for her. I didn't want her to see her dad loaded and be unreliable. I mean, when you're an addict or an alcoholic, you're an unreliable person and you're a liar. And I didn't want to be that. I didn't want to be that in her eyes. It's as simple as that.
Yeah. And so she was obviously a major change in your life at that point. And so like, do you think that other, you know, similar people in your situation, do you think that sort of thing would also have an impact in their life? Like, do you think that's something that comes naturally to all fathers, or do you think that's kind of, you know, it's a more unique situation? I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people in similar situations that you were in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you know, you guys, I don't think you have children, but when you
a little young for that right now.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you guys do, you'll understand what I'm talking about. It's there. Yep. There becomes somebody on the planet that you'll literally die for in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
There's not many people on Earth that I can say that about. So when you have that type of love for somebody, it's just inherited as a parent, I guess.
Yeah. And so what's your plan now, right? Like, you released this book, you're going all over the place doing interviews. I think it's a bestseller in Canada, I believe it is. You probably have the stats because you wrote it. It's a bestseller multiple places, definitely for sports books. I don't know about it in general. Mm-hmm. But so what's the plan now? What's the future hold for Brant Myers?
The future will be, as soon as I get off this call, I'm going to put on my workout gear, and then I'm going to run the stairs in my house because the gyms are all closed. So I'm going to run the stairs. I'm going to do some push-ups and sit-ups. I'm going to stretch. And then I'm going to have a shower and have some tea and go to bed. I mean, I really don't, like I said, man, I don't think about tomorrow. I have to stay in the moment today. And things seem to just work out, you know, when I do that.
That's good to hear. It's a nice, peaceful way to live life, I guess.
Yeah.
But so one last like thing I kind of wanted to talk about. So, you know, I do have someone close in my family who's also an alcoholic. And one thing he talks about constantly is that, you know, it doesn't matter if you're 1 year sober, if you're 2 years sober, if you're 10 years sober, you're still an alcoholic. It's still tempting, and it's constantly, you know, controlling yourself. How do you deal with that type of, like, how do you deal with that type of stress? You just said you take it one day at a time, right? But what are your strategies around staying that way? And, you know,
yeah, I stay close with some sober friends. And so we have the same interests when it comes to life, you know, they get me and I get them. And I think it's crucial that you have people in your life that you surround yourself with that have the same interests as you. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be hanging out with my old cocaine dealer and thinking that that's a good move.
No,
because
and you mentioned something, you know, really important. I was just gonna say, and you mentioned something really important about having a group with you. And in the book, you talked about how a lot of you ruined a lot of the relationships you did have, right? Because all the constant issues that you were having. I think there was something about you getting kicked out of your neighborhood or your house because your neighbors didn't like you. Probably too much partying going on for their taste. So how did you get this group of people around you that helped keep you on the right path? Where did they come from? Who are these people? Are they other NHLers? Like what is it?
No, they're just friends in Los Angeles. I've got probably 10 of them that I'm close with, and I've been close with them for 13 years. That's in the book. I talk about my tribe, and those guys are my tribe. They know who they are.
Yeah. And those people were with you from the second that you decided to go get sober, or even before that? What was the relationship before that?
Well, there was a few of them, but for the most part, after I got sober, I would meet them through other sober friends, and we just became buddies. And I sort of just stayed in contact with them for over a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so last thing, I promise, I keep saying last one and then I think of something else, but do you have any advice for... We do have a lot of our listeners, they're much younger. They're probably in the 15 to 20 year old, 21 year old range. I think that's like 80%. Mm. And they're all looking to, a lot of them are looking to become writers. A lot of them are looking to, you know, work in the NHL in some capacity. A lot of them are young athletes, people in the OHL, even, you know, a little bit earlier than that. So what kind of advice do you have for all those various groups of people when it comes to not just their careers, but also their lives in general and staying on the right path? Do you have any last thoughts on that before we let you go?
Yeah. If they look up the definition of karma, and they live by that, they'll be fine. They'll be fine. Yeah.
Really. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That's a really good piece of advice. Well, Brant, thank you so much for joining the podcast. I really appreciate this. I'm glad you and Morgan got connected. She's been a huge help to us as well. But thank you so much for joining. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was all cool. Right.
Take care, Brant.
It's been great, man.
Did you want to finish off with NHL recent NHL news, or do you want to just, should we just leave it at this?
We can talk about NHL news.
Okay. What NHL news? I haven't. I don't know what's going on. Luke,
there was a huge trade today.
Oh, yeah.
There was a huge trade today.
What was the trade?
I'm not 100% sure on what was the return for Palmieri and Zajac.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wait. I'm looking it up right now.
So the Islanders got Palmieri and Zajac, which is pretty fucking big.
Yeah, that's a huge move for the Islanders.
For prospect, for a first round pick, and AJ Greer, Mason Jopes.
So no relevant prospects, really. I don't think AJ.
This year, first round pick, and a conditional 2022 fourth round pick.
I always wonder, like, what was the argument around the conditional picks?
Yeah,
we want a third. We want a fifth. Like, why a fourth?
It's probably a third. It probably turns into a third.
What's the conditions if the Islanders make the playoffs or something? I don't know.
It's probably make a certain round of the playoffs.
No, that makes, because the Islanders lost Anders Lee, I think, for 5 weeks. Was it? So I'm not sure.
The rest of the year.
Oh, it is. It's done. Like, he's done.
I think he was done. Not 100% sure on that.
Well, Kyle Palmieri is huge for that Barzal line, I think, if they throw him there. Like,
and Zajac, like, just move. A classic guy on that team.
And I think that's just a perfect Lamoriello move right there. Just fucking grab Zajac, grab Andy Green last year, milk New Jersey of all the old guys.
Honors Lee's out for the rest of the season.
But is that including playoffs or is that the season?
I don't know.
Because because Anders Lee and Palmieri on the Islanders, that's a good looking team.
Yeah,
Islanders' future is
move.
Screwed. No, that's actually a massive move. I haven't even talked about it on the page yet, but I've been freaking in meetings all day. But I think
midday,
Palmieri. That makes, I think the Islander. I still don't see the Islanders as legit cup contenders. Maybe that's bad, just but I do see them Islanders? As like, yeah, just because they're the Islanders. But I do see them as competitive. Like, I can see
them. Aren't they in first in their division? Or, like, tied for first?
They might be, but it's not exactly a strong division. And it's what? You got Pittsburgh in there who hasn't been too great. Washington who hasn't. It's been good. But Washington's overperforming right now compared to where they should be. Their shooting percentage is way too high.
Yeah, they're tied with Washington.
Yeah. Well, Washington's going to regress. So this is the year they should go all in for it, though. Like, because the Islanders don't have a future right now. Like, their cap situation's bad. Their prospect pool has been depleted.
Yep.
Lamoriello hasn't made many of the best draft picks, so it's probably even better that he doesn't even have this pick to waste on whatever the hell he's in the draft.
Well, it's also a shitty draft year. likely.
And it's not a good draft year, and they're going to be in the late 20s probably. Yeah. So it is the year to go in. And then, so who's behind them? Who's behind Washington, the Islanders in the standings?
Penguins.
Penguins, and then who? Who's the fourth team?
Bruins, of course.
Bruins, okay, yeah. And Bruins, yeah, so this is the year, because Bruins are having a bad year. They also took Palmieri, who is probably going to go to the Bruins if the Islanders didn't get him. So they stole him from their divisional rival, who they're going to have to play in the playoffs. Right now, they're probably going to. So that's
there's
also
talk
huge.
That the Bruins, like whether the Bruins should try this year. I think that's kind of stupid. I think they have to try because they're in the waning years of Bergeron and Marchand, so they kind of owe it to those guys to try.
They have to go all in. Like they only have 2 years left of Bergeron and Marchand at where they're at, and then Rask's gone after this year, I think.
I think Rask hurt or something. Is he? I don't know. Something wrong with Rask?
Maybe.
I don't know.
God, I'm so out of touch with injuries, but
man, I'm pretty distracted lately.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I've been very distracted because he's on the IR. Okay, well, Halak's still a good option, but Rask is you want Rask in the playoffs. Yes. You don't want to rely on Halak.
I'm not sure how long he's on the playoffs. How long he's on the IR.
Regardless, Bruins need to go all in for it, and this is a big win for the Islanders, snaking Palmieri from the Bruins, which probably also helped get New Jersey a little bit more than what they were originally asking for. They probably got AJ Greer because of that, I would suspect.
Yeah, I don't know those prospects. Are they good?
No, but like AJ Greer is like he's like a solid. He could be like a third,
Like it didn't seem like a lot for the trade. Yeah,
it's not a lot. I think New Jersey, I think they didn't get the problem is it's a flat cap, and Palmieri and Zajac, that's a fair bit of salary. The only reason the Islanders
retain 50%
is because Anders Lee. Yeah, exactly, right? But the only reason they could even do that in the first place is because Anders Lee was out. Mm-hmm. If Anders Lee wasn't out, Islanders couldn't even make this move. So it's clearly a buyer's market right now, like everyone's been saying. Like Palmieri was the second best player available on the trade deadline market, other than unless you're going to include like guys like Eichel or the rental for pure rentals. It was Hall and him. That's it. Yes. Those are the two best players by far. And then it's like Granlund and whoever else is a free agent. But like they got the second best guy who's been better than Hall this year so far. So they got the best
and it seems like he fits in their system. Pickup. Like Taylor Hall wouldn't fit in their system at all.
Well, I mean, he would fit in their system if they played him on Barzal's line, I think. Because Barzal doesn't fit into their system other than the fact that they kind of just let Barzal do what he wants to do.
Yes.
So
on occasion.
Put Hall and Barzal to you. Although the problem is Palmieri is definitely a better shooter than Taylor Hall is. Especially this year. this year. Yeah. So putting him with Barzal will be huge because that's an elite shooter getting put with elite playmaker. So I don't know. I like that move. That's like the major piece of NHL news. I don't think anything else has really happened recently. There hasn't been any trades.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
Deadline
it's the last
Monday.
It's the last week, right?
Deadline Monday.
Monday?
Yeah.
So like four days from now, 5 days from now?
Yeah. April 12th.
Oh.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. You know who's also on the trade board at number 11? Sam Gagner. Friend of the show, Sam Gagner.
Friend of the show.
I'd like to see the Leafs pick him up.
Isn't he having a good year?
He's having an insanely good year. I've actually watched a couple Detroit games because Gagner's on there. And I kind of obviously like Dylan Larkin's sick as well. I wasn't really watching those Detroit games actually for Detroit. Now they say it out loud. Watching for like Tampa, but Sam Gagne was there.
I wonder if he gets moved. Like, I wonder if he wants to get. He probably wants to get moved.
I think he signed a 2-year deal. I might be wrong in that. Maybe he didn't. But
I thought it was one. Pretty sure it was one.
Maybe it was one. But I think he'll get moved. The thing is, I'm not sure how much value the league puts on Sam Gagne compared to his actual production. So that's probably going to be the. Like, Yzerman got a steal with a deal for him. Like, he's played like a $3 million guy or a $4 million guy this year.
Almost, and he's cheap.
And he's cheap. Yeah, so like, he'd be a huge deal for anyone. Alex Iafallo?
Yeah.
From LA.
He's a good option.
He's interesting. He's interesting for a couple teams. But again, he's not a needle mover. He's a guy that you need for depth, can show up in your top six if you need him to.
I think there'll be like a surprising team that tries to do something or something. The interesting team to me is what the Predators do, because they were talked about as a seller and now they're in a playoff spot. And people around the NHL are talking about how this year you want to be a playoff team to sell tickets for next year. Like, you desperately want to be a playoff team
for a lot of these teams. Is it, do you want to be a playoff team because you need to sell tickets next year, or is it you don't want to be a playoff team because you're not even going to be able to sell many tickets for the playoffs
to begin with? See, I've been hearing that, and then I've thought what you just said, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because it doesn't exactly make sense, because I think you're going to sell tickets next year no matter what, because people are going to want to fucking go to hockey games.
Yeah, I think people are just going to want to go do anything.
So you're going to sell tickets. Maybe you won't. Like, season tickets are what's the bigger deal to teams. So maybe you sell more of those if you make the playoffs.
Maybe. I mean, does that really move the needle if they get into the playoffs and lose in the first round?
I don't know.
I'm skeptical.
But I'm also skeptical about how smart the average fan is. So they see their team in the playoffs and they're like, they're good.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Nashville's difficult, because if they trade Ekholm, they're done.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they're not.
Nashville's not that difficult because they don't have to do anything right now.
Yeah, they can stay the course. But staying the course means a first round exit.
They have 1 year left on all these guys.
Do they?
Yeah. Except for like Ekholm, one or two.
Forsberg. Is it Victor Arvidsson is signed?
Mm-hmm.
Yosi's obviously signed. Ryan Ellis is signed. So it's really those two big guys, Forsberg and Ekholm, and Pekarinen, I think.
They all have one more year.
Yeah. Like, is anyone else that I'm missing there?
Granlund's their one UFA.
Granlund, he's like their UFA.
Big,
yeah.
They're big. Yeah. Well, but they Forsberg, could trade him and probably extend. Still. Yes. They unless you're doing a complete rebuild, you need to extend Forsberg. But
I mean, if they don't do a rebuild, they almost need to re-sign Forsberg. Because who's gonna sell tickets in Nashville if you don't have Forsberg? Roman Josi, I guess. That's it.
Yeah.
Duchene isn't really selling tickets. Ryan Johansson nowadays isn't selling tickets. Forsberg is the one that does all the cool stuff. Him and Josi. Those are the only two entertaining guys on the Predators.
Honestly, I want the Blackhawks in over them, though. So I think they should just trade them.
Why do you want the Blackhawks in?
I want the Blackhawks to do a quick turnaround. I want to see if Taves ever comes back. But I want to see Kane competing again. Because I think that would be a cool story. Right. He won, like, they had, like, the dynasty for a couple, 5 years, and then they died.
Boo.
And then
Boo.
They had a quick overhaul. That'd be sick. That's
Chicago
like,
needs to suck that? For the next decade. It's called karma. Like our previous guest just said, karma. You were good, now you're bad. That's how karma works. That's not how karma works at all. That's actually not karma at all, but it doesn't matter.
That's wrong karma. Eric's giving you wrong advice.
But like, why? Blackhawks deserve to suck now. Become Detroit.
Just a cool story if they can do that.
They can.
Right?
Although they tried to kind of do that this year.
They're doing things well.
Well, they tried to do it this year, and then all of a sudden they actually had a good goalie, and they didn't suck as much as anyone thought. It's actually very easy not to suck in the NHL. That's my conclusion. That's my conclusion out of all this. It's very easy to not completely suck.
If your name's
all you need to, yeah, like all you need to do to not completely suck is just get at least like your bottom half of your roster with replacement level guys. If you can get guys that are actual NHL players in your bottom six and your bottom two pairings, and then you have like a star or two, you should be able to coast into the middle, like the 20s.
Like Minnesota did forever.
Like Minnesota, at least they had quality, and then they're just like middling playoff team. But to not to completely suck, to be like 23rd instead of 31st, all you need to do is just have not AHL guys in your bottom six and your bottom two defense pairs. But Buffalo's failed to do that. Detroit didn't fail to do that. They purposely did that so that they can show up in last and get a bunch of high picks. Ottawa's kind of done that, but I mean, they're how close are they to Montreal right now in the standings? Like 5 points away or something ridiculous?
Not Montreal. Montreal is 13 points ahead of them. It's Vancouver.
Oh, sorry. Who was it? Oh, Calgary. Vancouver. Sorry. Yeah, Vancouver and
Calgary. They're only five Calgary. Points behind Vancouver and Calgary.
Yeah. So there you go. Right. So, and Ottawa's bringing in a bunch of young guys. So it's expected that they're not going to be necessarily full NHLers yet. So that's fine on their side. But to not completely suck like Buffalo, all you need to do is just bring in a bunch of guys that can just play in the NHL. And that's what Chicago did. They have guys.
Hoffman just got healthy scratched in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. He's an interesting trade target too because he hasn't worked out there. He has not been good in St. Louis at all.
No. Not extremely
good. We haven't talked about this on the podcast at all, but St. Louis has been terrible.
St. Louis has been real bad.
They've just not been a good team. Like at anything. Bennington's been ass.
He
hasn't been
terrible. He has 22 points in 36 games. The big thing is he's not scoring.
That's not good.
He only has 7 goals.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, though. Like Hoffman's only value comes from goals. He doesn't drive play. Mm-hmm. He's awful defensively. Only thing, man, he puts up some good assists.
Oh, no. Sorry. I was looking at the wrong stat. 9 goals. He has 9 goals. That's still not good. And he only has 21 points.
Yeah. So that's just not good. And all of St. Louis has been bad. Bennington, he's been like a complete disaster this year. Just one of the worst goalies in the league. Going and trying to fight like groups of San Jose players all at once, and then like throwing hissy fits every single night.
Was it just this year that he signed his contract, or was that last year?
He signed it this year, that 5-year deal. He signed it like a couple weeks ago, dude.
Yeah, they
saw the season he was having, and they're like, "I'm gonna lock this down for 5 years." Keep telling me GMs are so much smarter than the average fan when they do shit like that. Fucking ridiculous, man.
But that's insane.
Yeah, it was just bad. And it's going to look like a Martin Jones contract. Probably what it's going to end up looking like.
It already does.
Yeah, well, it already is starting to. And I don't think Krug's worked out there very well. Like, I think he's been fine. But I don't think Krug hasn't replaced Pietrangelo, is what I should say.
That was foreseeable. Which isn't fair to
him. Yeah, that isn't fair to him. He shouldn't have to. They paid him like he should almost, but he shouldn't have had to.
Well, that's what you do in free agency.
Well, I mean, but they could have signed Pietrangelo for what, like $1 million more? Or like $1.5 million more? Like, come on. But anyways, and then Falk's been, had a good season. Ryan O'Reilly's been good as always. It's really their goaltending that's let them down. And then, you know, the defense, Parayko hasn't been very good this year. I don't know what the hell happened to Parayko, but 2 years ago in that cup.
You forgot, the, forgot their cup how run, to play hockey.
He's that's forgotten. Always weird. He's literally forgotten. He was like, he was like, I'd argue he was performing like a top 10 defenseman for like a year and a half. Like he was insanely good. And then just 2 years of nothing.
Okay, to get off St. Louis for a second, I want to talk about, because this reminded, talking about Parayko forgetting how to play hockey, remind me of the people commenting on that Jack Eichel thing. That Jack Eichel post you just posted today about the trade. Oh my God, how many people thought that was a good trade for Buffalo was...
The Ryan O'Reilly one?
No, no, no.
Oh, sorry. I'm mispronouncing the Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier for Rasmus Dahlin and Jack Eichel trade.
Yeah, that was astounding.
The amount of people that thought it was a good deal for New Jersey, or that thought it was a good deal for Buffalo.
For Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean the thing is, right? If people keep thinking Dahlin's a bust, then it is a good deal, right?
Because you're getting two. No, it depends how good you think Jack Hughes is. Like people are underestimating Jack Eichel right now. Like definitely underestimating
100%.
The ability of Jack Eichel.
Yeah, it's like suddenly over it three months of Jack Eichel not being as good as he was like literally 6 months a year ago. Now is like people have forgotten that Jack Eichel was literally a top 10 center. Almost a top five center last year.
Mm-hmm. What are his underlying numbers? What are his underlying numbers? Like, are they that bad?
Not great this year. But like, a lot of it's just shooting percentage.
Okay.
A lot of it's literally just like he just can't get the puck in the net. Him and Taylor Hall and Victor Olofsson and everyone else on Buffalo just can't score.
You want to talk about karma? I feel like Buffalo's getting karma for tanking for Jack Eichel so blatantly. They're being punished.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's late karma, but it's karma.
Late karma? What do you mean late karma? They've sucked since they've done it.
Yeah, that's true. But Jack Eichel.
And he didn't fix their team. It's 5 years later. He hasn't fixed shit.
He had a legitimate case for a Hart nomination last year.
Oh, for sure.
I think we can agree with that.
You cannot write off Jack Eichel. That narrative
it's getting ridiculous.
Ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah. And Eichel's going to be better than Hughes. He's going to be better than Hischier. I don't have many doubts about that. Though Hughes looks sick, but I don't think he's going to be as good as Eichel. But then it comes down to what do you think the difference is between Hischier and Dahlin? That's tough. I think that's a little bit closer than you might want to give it credit for at this point, considering Buffalo's ruined him. Hischier's good. I don't think Hischier's the number one. Dahlin's not dead. You don't count Dahlin. Kids has exactly. Like 250 point seasons in his first.
He's still fucking 20 years old. Like
he's 21 now, right? Or is he 20?
He's turning 21 in 4 days.
Okay, no, so he's 21.
My math is terrible. 6 days.
So 4 days when this podcast is released. Yes. Yeah, so that's... Oh, man.
That's hard to... Like, think about a guy like Sedano Chara. He was on the Sens, and he was not elite. He was good, not elite. Like, Rasmus Dahlin is still a NHL defenseman. Like, maybe not a great one, but he still could.
Yeah.
He still belongs in the NHL. So, and that, like, Chara really didn't explode as a player until he reached Boston, which was, like, way late into his career.
Yeah, but that's also a rare example. But you are right. Most defensemen don't even get into the NHL until they're 21, 22. 23.
But that's the narrative around defensemen is they don't get sick until like later. Like
it's like 300 later, games, like, I think. Like, it's yeah. usually.
Like, think about Ekblad. He's been in the league forever, and this year he's and finally he only really broke up a out like caliber year.
Yeah, this year and almost and kind of last year, I think that's when he find, and that's 4 years in, 5 years in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no! Wait, no, like, no. 2014, 6 years in.
Yes.
6 years in, he finally became that number one guy. So yeah.
But think about it, him and Dahlin are very comparable because like they both had pretty good rookie years, so they were looking good, but they kind of regressed. And then mm-hmm. who knows?
Dahlin. The question isn't will Dahlin rebound? The question is which team can actually develop him properly and fix him.
Oh, I think right? Buffalo is just a full mess. Like,
but exactly right. Like, if he stays with Buffalo for another 2 years, does he get fixed?
No.
or is Probably he ruining not. His career and he needs to ask for a trade in the by this offseason because otherwise, you know, as an NHL player, you're putting so much trust into your team.
Yes.
So much trust. Like yep. His first 4 years of your career are the most important years because that's your development time. By the time you're 26, you are who you are for most players, for 95% of players, 98% of players. You are who you are at 26. You are who you are at 25. You almost are who you are at 24 almost for a lot of guys too. So it's like he's 20, turning 21 now. He has another 2 years, 3 years. And then at that point, he is who he is. And we can't care about he was a first overall pick anymore.
No. But you still can say it now.
I mean, I don't even think you need to say it now. Who cares if he was a first round pick? He had a 40 point pace his first year. He had a 50 point pace his second year. Mm-hmm. He was showing the development. And then this year, just a complete disaster everywhere.
Like, it is interesting to see like how bad this year is on players. Like how many rebound seasons will we have next year?
Oh, so many.
With a more normal, it's more normal.
Backs. We don't even know the impacts that a lot of players have had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they got healthy again, are they at 80%, 90%? Nikita Gusev has been very bad this year, like very bad, but he also had COVID. He was out for a while because he was sick. Like, do you know, I have no doubt that he's still dealing with the symptoms of COVID. Like, I know people that like their brains are just foggy for like months. They're just mm-hmm. like, they just can't think and focus. Like if you can't focus as an NHL player, think mm-hmm. that's going to impact your performance. So there's going to be a bunch Definitely. Of guys that are going to rebound next year, but there's also going to be maybe a few guys that never rebound.
Possibly.
Which is kind of horrific and awful to say, but you know, they're because Possible. Of COVID, their careers might be over realistically. Like Marco Rossi, man. Marco Rossi's lost the last year of his career. He's young. He's very young. But he lost a year development at 18.
It happens without COVID though too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah. Oh yeah. No doubt. Brent Myers is talking about right. Like a large mm-hmm. large part of getting the NHL is luck, mm-hmm. avoiding injury. Marco Rossi, mm-hmm. you know, the likelihood of him becoming an NHL player has dropped since the draft.
Definitely. For sure. Definitely.
For sure, because he lost first off, when you're 18 years old, that's a critical year of development. You lose a year at 26, you know, you're not really developing anymore. 18, that's a huge development year. And then whatever long-term impacts come from this, shortness of breath, lung capacity, focus, whatever it is, I don't know, a million different side effects to COVID. Oh, it sucks. Because Marco Rossi had a chance to be the best player from that draft, or at least one of the best players from that draft.
All I'm Anyways. Thinking about is my house, man.
Yeah, so we'll let it go. Thank you so much for listening to the Talking Hockey podcast. Thank you, Brent Myers, again for coming on.
thank you everyone for tuning into this week's episode. We love and appreciate each listener that sticks around to the end. With that comes reminders to leave a review, press follow on those streaming platforms, and make sure to head over to Instagram to follow Talking Hockey. We're on the road to 30K, and we can't wait to continue to build our audience. Luke, Eric, Ty, and Martin signing off. We'll see you all next week.